Hey friend, it's Brittany Lynn. I know you're likely expecting Katie Hunt, and I promise she is featured in this episode. If we haven't met before, I am Katie's publicist, and I am also the podcast producer of this very podcast. We wanted to do something special for the 400th episode of the podcast, so we decided to turn the tables, and I'm interviewing Katie. We discuss Katie's favorite part of the podcast recording process, advice she'd give to herself when she was just starting out, the real cost of running this podcast, and also the proof to product business as a whole, examples of times when she felt stuck in business and what she did about it, and so much more. This was such a fun episode to record, and we really hope you enjoy it. We are excited to hear the feedback from the episode, and don't worry, Katie will be back in the host seat next week. Before we get into the episode, I wanted to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by our Paper Camp program. Paper Camp is our wholesale coaching program where we teach you everything that you need to know to build strong wholesale foundations. Over the course of 4 weeks, we tackle your product line, sales tools, marketing plan. We even talk about how to exhibit at trade shows if that's something that you want to do. We start with your product line and go into everything from how often you should be releasing new products to ensuring that your numbers are sustainable for the wholesale market and their price for profit. Each week's teachings build on the previous week, and we actually host weekly live engaging coaching calls to answer any and all of your questions. We are opening for enrollment for the next round of Paper Camp very soon, and we do sell out this program every time. So if you'd like to get on the wait list, you can go to prooftoproduct.com/papercamp, and you will actually get early access to enroll in the next round of Paper Camp. Now, on to the show.
I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started.
Hey, Katie, welcome to the Proof to Product podcast.
Thank you for having me today, Brittany. It's so good to chat with you.
You've never heard those words uttered to you. How does it feel? The first question, we're just going to jump right on in. Like, how does it feel to be welcomed to your own podcast?
It's a little strange, but I also am enjoying it because, you know, it's nice to be on the other side of the mic too.
Yeah, just show up, relax, you know, answer the questions. This is going to be fun. So for listeners out there, you already know who I am, kind of what we're doing for this podcast episode. What we did was we took all of your questions. So we took questions from Instagram, from the Paper Camp alumni group, from our labs members. I threw in a few of my own personal questions, and we're going to just have this Q&A with Katie. And the first section is going to be podcast related questions. And then the second section is going to be business related questions. And I'm so excited to dive in. Katie and I just have such a good time together. So it'll just really feel like we're just two girls gabbing at lunch. So yeah. I'm excited to dive in.
Me too. Thanks for doing this, Britt.
Yeah, of course. Okay. So for listeners who haven't been here since the very beginning, which is May 2017 is when we started this podcast.
Yeah, we did.
What led to you creating the Proof to Product podcast in the first place?
Yeah. So 2016 was a real big year for my family and for my businesses. And so I'll give a little backstory here. Basically, 2016 was the year that I had both my product-based business. We were selling in stores throughout the United States, Canada, and abroad. And I was also building up Proof to Product. I had started Proof to Product in 2011. At the time, it was still called Trade Show Bootcamp. But those two things were happening, and it took up a lot of my time. It was also the year that I had my fourth baby. And so we had four kids under the age of 6.5 at the time. And I was traveling quite a bit speaking on stages. So that was the year, 2016 was the year that I taught four classes for Creative Live, live in studio at 28 weeks pregnant. And I was traveling to like Mexico and throughout the United States to speak on stages about selling wholesale and growing a product-based business. And it was awesome. But it was also just like way too much. When I got to the end of the year, I was feeling really burnt out. I describe it as I hit a wall. And I realized like some things had to change in order for this to become more sustainable and also continue the enjoyment. Also, I didn't want to be putting this kind of pressure on my family. So that year, it was like in October-ish of 2016, I went on a solo retreat. And I still do these. I will go away for like one or two nights by myself. I'll have an agenda of things I want to think through and plan for. But the purpose of that specific retreat was mainly like, what am I going to do to make this more sustainable? How am I going to take care of myself, my family, and also help people in the process? And one of the things that came out of that retreat was, okay, I'm not going to speak on stages anymore, but, and I'm not going to travel because that's too hard on myself and my family, but how am I still going to maintain visibility? How am I still going to help people? And I thought, well, I'm going to start a podcast. I can do that from home. I can fit that into the times when kids are napping at that point, when kids are napping, or, you know, I could fit it into my day to day. And so that was one of the big things. Another big thing was I decided I was going to start hiring help both at home and in the business. And that is when you and I connected for 5 hours a month. You were pitching me to podcasts to get my name out there and to get visibility. And I thought, no way is anyone going to want to work just like so few hours a month. And you're like, no, let's do it. And of course, that role has grown a lot over the years now that we've worked together for so long. And I'm so grateful that you took a chance on me at the time to do that work at just a small amount. I think we get in our heads a little bit of like, oh, I have to hire somebody full time and it has to be this big thing. In reality, you know, there's a lot of people looking for flexible work. And then I also decided I was going to close down the manufacturing arm of my product-based business. And so all of those things combined were intended to calm my calendar and give me more space to do the things I loved and also make sure that like I wasn't burning out. And so that is how the podcast started. It was me just kind of hitting a wall going, okay, something's got to give here. And one of the things I can do to replace all this travel and speaking and other things is the podcast.
I love it. And I think that's really important to share because, again, I'm sure we have listeners who have been here since episode one who's maybe listened to every single episode, which is kind of crazy to think about. Someone's listened to 400 episodes.
Also, the early ones, I had no idea what I was doing.
No, yeah. We were just kind of like throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what stuck.
Still are.
But no, it's been such a journey. And I'm just so grateful that I've been along this journey with you. You know, you took a chance on me too, and we've just grown together. Okay. Speaking of the podcast process.
Yeah.
What is your favorite part of the podcast recording process? So from outlining ideas and topics and guests to preparing for the interview itself, creating the promotion for the episode. There's a lot that goes into every single podcast episode here. What's your favorite part?
So I would say there's two things that I really enjoy. The first is kind of an obvious one, but the actual interview itself, talking to everybody, hearing their stories, being able to shine a spotlight on all of our guests. I always tell them before we start recording, like, look, my job here is to highlight your story and talk about the incredible things you're doing. We are going to talk about some of the challenges you face, but also I want you to feel really comfortable with everything we talk about here. And so I want it to be like friends sitting on a couch like we are now, so to speak, and like telling the story. But my goal is always to highlight our guests in the best possible light and to bring attention to the cool things that they're doing. And so that is certainly one of my favorite parts of this. As somebody who loves strategy and loves mapping out how all the pieces of my business flow together, I will also say that I really love, we are very thoughtful in who we bring onto the show and how we bring them in, when we bring them in, the questions we ask them. And so I would say, like, zooming far out, we're planning things out pretty far in advance and trying to pick our themes and topics and things like that. And so I do love that part of it too. And I love how we're weaving these stories in at integral times that are important for our audience. And, you know, they're hearing things when they need to hear it most. Like, we're talking about trade shows prior to trade show season, and we're talking about just lots of different things, but we do try to line it up with what's happening in real time too.
What do you wish listeners knew about what goes into creating each episode, like the behind the scenes of the creation of each episode?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I guess one thing they'd probably be surprised to hear is that I get nervous before every single episode because I want to do everyone justice. I want to make sure that we're telling their story in the best possible way. I also think that not all of our guests are media trained either. There's a lot of folks who are just like, you know, just like I was when I started this podcast in 2017, I had never really done this before. And so we get a lot of folks that are our community members, our students who haven't been on a podcast before, and they do get a little nervous. So some of my job is to just make sure they feel comfortable at the forefront of the interview so that we can have a fluid conversation without them feeling worried. So that was something I didn't necessarily anticipate being part of the job. I thought, you know, we'll sign on, I'll ask my questions, we'll have some laughs and some good stories and move on. But I'd say part of the difficulty of being a host is getting those stories out of people. You may ask a question and think that the answer is going to go in one direction, but it may go in a totally different direction. And so then how do we either continue down that other direction or how do we bring it back? And I'm still working on my interview skills, of course, but like it's been an interesting challenge to go through that process.
Okay, everyone listening, I'm shocked by Katie's answer. I would have never thought you would have said that you got nervous. Yeah, like I don't feel like I could name like a couple of times that you had messaged me beforehand and had said like you were a little nervous or something.
Yeah.
But I feel like you show up cool, calm, collected. Like, I don't know. And for everyone listening, I did not send these questions time to Katie.
I did not know these were coming.
So I really just threw her into the deep end. So yeah, I think that that's relatable though, because like you said, some people do come onto the podcast. It's their first podcast. They're nervous. You know, it's just like normal to be nervous. And we try to prep guests as much as we can of like, here's what to expect. Here's kind of the range of questions. But again, like you said, we do want to kind of go with the flow of conversation. We're not a very strict, these are the six questions that we're asking no matter what, because that just doesn't feel natural to us. So I'm shocked that I'm learning things during this episode.
You know, I told some of our, I think it was our labs members, or maybe it was with my advisory board group, and I was confessing to them. I was telling them, I still get nervous. I teach multiple times in labs every single month, and I still get nervous when I sit down to do our coaching calls or whatever. And I don't know, like, I'm not nervous because I lack the knowledge or experience. I know once we sit down and start talking business, like I can talk shop, right? Like, but I think it's just, I really want to do a good job. I care about the output. I care about the people. I want them to get the answers they need so that they can stop overthinking things or stop worrying about things and move on with things. So I think it comes more from it's obviously self-imposed, but I think it's more of just, I want to do a good job.
Yeah. So what is advice that you'd offer your 2017 self when you were just starting the podcast?
I would reiterate some of the things we've already done. I would tell them show up consistently. I would tell them once a week is fine. You don't have to feel like you're falling behind, because when we were starting, a lot of people moved to like two episodes a week or even more. And I remember us talking about that at different stages over the last several years of like, oh, should we be doing this too? You know, our download numbers would be better. But like, I built this to be a vehicle for me to help people in a way that still suits my lifestyle and my schedule. And so I would tell my past self, like, don't feel like you got to, keep up with the Joneses. You do you. But also the consistency is going to be incredible. Like, our listeners don't know this, but we talk about it all the time. Our listeners go back and listen to past episodes all the time. Like, it's shocking when we look at our statistics to see our weekly downloads are strong and what people listen to, what's releasing that week. But some of our best episodes are things that came out years ago. And so having that consistency, showing up, and just, again, doing your best to deliver the best content is the biggest piece of advice I give. The other piece I'd say is it's okay to take breaks if you need to. Like, we take a summer break and a winter break. It's just a couple of weeks, but it does give us space to take a minute for ourselves too.
Yeah, I think when we look at the podcast numbers, which we do at least on a monthly basis, it always shocks us that we're like, wow, there's such a backlog of people listening to podcast episodes that a lot of times are still very relevant. You know, even episodes from 2018, especially with kind of the types of content that we talk about. Of course, there's ones where it was kind of like good for that time period, but doesn't necessarily apply now. But since we're sharing a lot of people's stories, it's like those stories are always inspiring and relevant to people. So If you're a new listener, go to the backlog. You'll be with everyone else listening.
Exactly. I will say too, one thing I'm really enjoying now is because we have 400 episodes, we are going back and asking people that came to share their story early on, like, come back and do an update for us. Like, you were, people loved your first episode. Come back and share where you're at now or how things are going for you now. And I think that's really impactful for our listeners too, because they get to see the growth, and that's cool.
Okay, let's get into the nitty-gritty numbers. Everybody's chomping at the bit to know. How much does it cost to run the Proof to Product podcast each month?
Each month? So just for background for folks, we use an outside editing service, and I have a couple of team members that are involved in producing the podcast, like Brittany. And we also use some AI tools to help with things like transcriptions and things like that. On average, each episode costs about $400 to produce. So it's costing Proof to Product $400 per episode. And we tend to issue out like, or publish 4, sometimes 5 episodes a month. So we're looking anywhere from $1,600 to $2,000 per month to put out free content for our audience.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that cost includes like your own time.
No, it doesn't.
Pay, which obviously like you are involved in the podcast. So yeah, like that should count for something. But that is literally just outside team members, tools.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. It does not include my compensation. It does not include my time. It just includes the outside support that I've brought on to make this possible.
Yeah. Which again, I think there's a range of podcast costs. Like I think that there's probably podcasts that cost less than that. And I totally know for a fact there's podcasts that cost more than that. But yeah, everybody wants to know the numbers, you know?
Which I don't blame them. I get curious too. I think to your point, we have done this for less in the past, and we've also done it for more in the past. We had more team members, or we had a different editor that cost more per month. I feel like we're kind of in a sweet spot right now where things are flowing really easily, because also you have to take into consideration time versus energy and effort too, mm-hmm, right? And dollars, of course. But for me, having too many hands in each production, like getting an episode from start to finish out the door, I prefer to have fewer people involved. And, you know, maybe we pay a little more for that, but it just makes for an easier process on the back end. So yeah, there's no, I guess I want our listeners to know, like, this is our cost, but that's not everyone's cost. So if you're looking at getting into doing a podcast, you could just, you know, record on your own and upload it pretty raw and it'd be fine. So this is what I choose to do because I want to focus my time and energy on other things, and I want somebody else at doing the editing and outreach and stuff like that.
What lessons have you learned from guests that have been on the podcast that has changed how you run your business?
Good question. This isn't how I run my business, but it's more of how I interview people. Having been on a lot of podcasts as a guest myself, I've learned a lot about interview styles and how I want to be a listener more than a talker on some of these episodes. Although, of course, when I have things to say, I add it in. But I've learned, I mean, when we've had people come in and do stuff on like email marketing or paid ads or kind of more the operational side of business, there are definitely things I've learned. I really enjoyed our recent episode with Pat Flynn, how he talked about lean learning and leaning into experts and consultants and finite resources for the problem that you're currently facing, not potential future problems. So that was something concrete that I learned from one of our guests. And I just really enjoyed his book too. So if you guys haven't checked out that episode, definitely go listen and look at his book. But yeah, I would say, I feel like I learned something new from every guest that I talk to, things that I like directly apply to my business. If anything, I feel like it's more nuanced of like ideas start to form and like seeds are planted.
Okay, now we're going to get into some business-related questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so for new listeners, again, who maybe haven't been here,
yeah,
Katie's business used to be called Trade Show Bootcamp. So if you hear that phrase and you're like, what are we talking about? Yeah. That used to be what her business was called, and then we transitioned it to Proof to Product. So when you first started Trade Show Bootcamp, did you imagine the longevity and the success that it has now? Like, did you have this big vision, or are you kind of shocked at what you've built?
No, I did not have the vision for what it is today. Also, real quick before I answer this question, a fun fact is episodes 100, 101, and 102 of Proof to Product are about our name change and our rebrand from Trade Show Bootcamp to Proof to Product. And I think that's really cool that we're now talking in the 400th episode now of like, I don't know. It's just really cool to look back on and be like, wow, like so much has changed.
Happened 300 episodes
ago. It's 300 episodes ago. I know. It's wild. Okay. So did I envision this when I started Trade Show Bootcamp? No, I did not. I mean, honestly, when I started Trade Show Bootcamp, I was searching for community. I was looking for other product-based business owners that I could connect with who could help me in my business and I could help them in their business. You got to remember, like, I was running my own product brand from 2008 and I didn't start what is now Proof Your Product until 2011. And so I was finding people on like Twitter. I mean, Instagram wasn't even around back then. Like, we were connecting on Twitter before trade shows. What are you bringing? What are you doing? Like, what's the weather going to be like? Like, all of those conversations were happening in like pockets online, but it was like mostly Twitter and some Facebook groups. But I was finding a lot of like big brands. I wasn't finding a lot of smaller indie brands like myself. And so I wanted to find other people who were doing what I was doing. And I wanted to, I knew that if we could just bring our heads together and they shared their experiences and I shared my experiences, that we could do a lot of great things together. So for those listening and who aren't familiar, I have a background in business. I worked in the corporate world for over 12 years. I have two MBAs, one's in marketing, one's in finance. Like, running the business and that side of things really lit me up. I loved the sales. I loved the marketing. I loved the operational strategies and systems. And I looked around my industry and those people I was meeting on Twitter and stuff, and they were artists first and they were struggling with the business side of things. And so I would like drop random tweets about things I was doing with Kelp Designs, my product brand at the time. And they were like, oh my God, this is so cool. I hadn't even thought of that. And then they would share something they were doing in Illustrator. And I'd be like, oh my God, life changing. I didn't know that I could do that. So really, what I set out to do was make life easier for all of us and to create a community where we could openly share in a culture of like reciprocity. Is that the right word? Reciprocity?
Reciprocal.
I set out to create a community where we could share information freely without judgment, without worry of people stealing ideas or any of that stuff. And so this all really blossomed from that. And then so that was 2008 when I was starting my brand. And in 2010, or maybe it was 9 even, I wrote a blog post for a friend of mine. I think it was 2009. I wrote a blog post for a friend of mine that was like 5 things I learned by exhibiting. At the time, it was called the National Stationery Show. And that blog post kind of blew up in the indie maker community. And I started getting emails from people over and over and over, like every day. And it was the same kind of questions. And it was the same questions I had asked myself, like, how do I price my product? How do I know if I'm ready to do a show? Blah, blah, you know, all these things. And so I would sit there and thoughtfully write everyone back. And I realized it kind of got unsustainable. So in 2011, that's when I started doing these workshops, and I would invite other people to come in and we would just have open Q&A about different things. I invited buyers and sales reps, and it's essentially what Paper Camp is today. We started that in 2011, and the program has evolved over time and we continue to keep it relevant for what's happening today. It's not something we created in 2011 and it's just the same as it was then. But the structure of what we cover first, second, third, fourth, and then also how we bring in other voices from our indie like creator community has stayed the same. And really our focus on community building and giving people a voice to share. So long-winded answer here, but no, I did not set out to create this business that would be 14 years later supporting thousands of people, tens of thousands of people. And I'm really proud of that. I don't know where we're going to go next. I have some big things planned for the next year, but like, I don't know. I just want to enhance the connection with our community members and help them make more money and build a business that fits around the life they want to lead and, you know, avoid the burnout and things that so many are feeling.
So to have a business that's been around for this long, I would say you're what the kids would call an OG in the online business world.
And so I'm not a dinosaur, like I would tell people. I'm like, no, oh, I'm a dinosaur in this world.
No. But to be around for that long in business, it takes a lot of resilience. And yeah, so for sure. What do you do to stay resilient throughout all of the changes that have happened, you know, just in society, in online business? You know, a lot has changed since 2011. You know, 2011, looking at us now, it's all completely different. So are there mantras that you say to yourself, you know, how do you stay resilient? Because I think the listeners are other business owners who they want to be able to be like, I've been around for 15 years. What do you do to stay resilient?
Good question. You know, I started my product brand in 2008 at the height of a recession. I went to my first trade show 6 months later when I had no business being there. You know, I survived through COVID and helped majority of my clients survive that as well. I had 4 babies over the course of building these businesses. We've had economic downturns. We've had, it has been a wild ride the last 14 years. And so I think a couple of things have contributed to my ability to survive it, I guess is the best way to frame it. One, I'm pretty conservative financially. I'm big on keeping a cash cushion and knowing okay, I've got this to last me out. If everything were to shut down today and no revenue were to come in, we'd be okay for a while. And it wasn't always that way. In the early days, I had to build that cash cushion. I had to strategically ramp it up. But financially, I'm pretty conservative. And at the beginning, I should also mention that I had a day job that was helping to support my product brand. And I left that in 2012. So I had that luxury and that privilege of that. But knowing my numbers, feeling confident in my numbers, having that cash cushion has allowed me to try things. And when they didn't work so well, then it was okay. The business could survive it. I could test and experiment. So that was one thing. I think, too, recognizing that everything we do in business is, in fact, an experiment. And some things are going to work really well. Some things are not going to work really well. But ultimately, we set the rules for this business. As the owner of Proof to Product, I can say yes to things that I want to pursue. I can say no to things that don't make a lot of sense, whether it's a no forever or a no for now, And there's a real power in that that I don't know if a lot of people realize they have, and they may not leverage in their business as much as they should. I'm also very much a people pleaser, though, so I do have a hard time saying no. And thank you, Brittany, for helping me with some of those things. But I would say building up that cash cushion early was helpful. I would say recognizing that we have the power to say yes to things and manage our capacity and making sure that what we're saying yes to is, in fact, taking us closer to the goals that we have. I would also say a lot of it's just agility, maybe, in the fact that when I see a need, I try to do something and deliver on that. When things aren't working, I do try to pivot quickly or make changes so that it is working better. I think sometimes people build things up and then completely tear them down. And I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle where it's I'd rather tweak and adjust to see if we can continue to make it work rather than tear it all down. And then I think the main thing is I just kept showing up. I kept showing up. And also, I guess this kind of ties to this. I care really deeply about our community and I care really deeply about getting results for my clients. And I do think that that is a powerful thing. I think people do recognize that and see that. At least I hope they do. But I also think the consistency of continuing to show up and doing our best. I'm also not afraid to tell people that I'm having a hard time right now. I do it more behind closed doors in our communities than I do publicly, but I'll let people know hey, this isn't quite working the way I want it to. So we're going to make some shifts, or I'm personally having a tough time right now. So we're going to shift this call to this day. I shut down our mastermind and did a pause for that for a couple of years because I needed more capacity during COVID when I had 4 kids homeschooling. So anyhow, I feel like I'm babbling a little bit now. I don't know if this is helpful for the listeners, but I did not have this in mind when I set out. And I would say that resilience is something all of us have inside of us. And it's just a matter of continuing to show up and continuing to deliver on promises and also having empathy and remembering that other people are human and they're doing their best too.
Yeah, and to really echo, and again, I obviously work with Katie. We are also friends, so we talk business, outside of me working for her type. We kind of have a unique relationship. But really, I feel like to stay resilient for this long is a big part of it is what you said of knowing when to say yes and knowing when to say no. And so we get a lot of requests. So I also handle Katie's speaking events, partnerships that we do with Proof to Product, media interviews, all that kind of stuff. And we don't say yes to everything. And it's not because we don't like the opportunity or, it has nothing to do with that. It's really just sometimes looking at the calendar, looking what we have planned, looking what we already set out as what are our priorities, and then kind of sticking to them. Because if you do everything that everybody is asking you to do, you will burn out and you will not be able to pull on that resilience that you have within you. And like Katie said, sometimes having another person to bounce the idea off of is nice. So even if you don't have that team member or something, a peer-led mastermind, or, if you're in a program like the advisory board that we have, even your spouse of vocalizing to your partner, hey, this is what I have priorities for my business. And then something comes along and it's like, oh, should I do this? It's like, well, you said you're going to prioritize like this, this, and this. So sometimes you do need that like outside person to be like, this sounds great. It's a not right now. A lot of times we'll revisit things, you know, but yeah, it's kind of like staying the course.
For sure. And I would say too, like even just stick a post-it on your computer that says my focus and my priority right now is wholesale, direct to consumer sales, getting my email marketing in place, whatever it is. Like I'm talking to listeners here, but like, you know, stick it so it's visible and it reminds you. It's just kind of a casual reminder. But yes, I mean, Brittany, I think I would have burnt out a long time ago, frankly, if you hadn't been on my team, because one, you and I do have a very special relationship and I feel like we work very well together and you understand how I work and I understand how you work. And there'll be times where something will come in and before I can even see it, you write to me and say, this is a no, this is not right now. And like, you will hold the boundaries for me in times where I don't really hold them for myself, or like, again, that people pleasing side pops out and I'm like, oh, but it's just an hour or it's just a half hour or whatever. And it's like, you're reflecting back to me.
You're like, I think we should say yes to this. And I push back and I'm like, yeah, I think we should say no. And here are the reasons why. We just had a meeting and we talked about, this is what's on your schedule and where are we fitting this in? Are you sleeping? And then you're like, oh, okay.
Right. And you have access to my family calendar, which is always nuts. And so it's helpful.
Well, speaking of, that leads me into my next
question. Oh my gosh. What are people asking?
So many people asked, how do you juggle four kids and running a business? And so on my notes, I made a joke of like, should we show them a screenshot of your calendar, like on stories, and be like, if you want to see what it looks like.
No, because it gives me anxiety. I don't want to give any.
No, yeah, we're not showing that. And I do want to caveat this question of like, many people only ask that question to women of like, how you juggle like family and business.
Totally.
But I do think it's important to highlight that I'm asking it in a way of like, how do you and Patrick do this together? You know, he has his own career.
Yeah.
You have a very thriving career. You do have four kids. There's a lot going on. And that it was a common question of like, how do you do it all? So.
Gosh. Okay. I'm going to be real here. It is every day is a different day. Some days it's taking it 1 hour at a time. I will say it has changed over the years. So just for perspective, for those listening, my kids right now are 9 years old to, what is she, almost 16 is my oldest. And so the stage of life we are in right now is very different than when I was in baby toddler mode and we were starting up these businesses. I mean, I can't tell you how many photos I have on my phone from like when I had a baby in my lap and a laptop on my lap. And I'm like, I mean, Colin, when he was 3 months old, was in a suitcase at a trade show in New York as we're setting up the trade show booth. I mean, it was propped up like a crib. He wasn't like zipped in there, but like, you know what I mean? Like that time in my life with the kids being little and me being in like more of the startup stage of business, that felt hard in different ways than things feel hard now. And so I want to acknowledge for anyone listening that has the babies at home, the toddlers at home, that is a stage that is tough. Like you are not sleeping. I remember just constantly working with a kid on my lap or in the fringe hours of the day. And I had to constantly remind myself, and I still do today, of like, we will do our best. We are all doing our best. I know that my brain and my body wants me to be 10 steps ahead right now, but I am where I'm at right now. And I need to just keep doing what I'm doing. But like that phase of life was very different than where we're at now. We just finished the school year. I now have two kids in high school. What? I've got one in middle school and one in elementary school. And so now the challenges are, you know, they can feed themselves. They can take, I'm not worried about keeping them alive so much as I am. We're in 12 sports. We have multiple kids playing club and wanting to see friends. And like the logistics are really hard right now. In fact, one of the kids just called me as we were talking and they're like, I'm going to so-and-so's house. I'm like, yeah, okay. So I share it to say just like, I want to tell our listeners, like the seasons are going to change and the parenthood seasons are going to change just as the business seasons are going to change. And I really am, I try to be very intentional with how I'm scheduling my days, how I'm scheduling my time, but also like taking a bigger step backwards. Like I know the summers are bananas because everybody's home. So I don't schedule, like there's times of the year where I go hard and go further into things and work a lot more hours. And there's times where I know I'm just not going to have that capacity. And so that's been a huge help to me of like kind of resetting my own expectations. I also make a joke of like, I lower my expectations and then I lower them again and then I lower them again. I will also say we have a lot of help. And I think this is an important thing to share. So this didn't happen overnight. This didn't happen right away, but I hired Brittany and then I hired a couple of other people on a contract basis to help in the business. And that was wonderful. It was great. And then I realized, wait a minute, maybe I don't need more help in the business. I don't need to hire more people there. Maybe I need more help at home. And so my first hire at home was a college kid. We lived near a university and they worked for me, I think 3 to 5 hours a week. And they would come and help do laundry and fold laundry. And when the kids were younger, this is when I started this. And they would go return things to the stores for me. They'd go pick up our groceries for me. Like it was kind of like a mother's helper role. And it felt a little weird to ask for that kind of help. But at the same time, I wasn't sitting at a computer to do a podcast episode wondering like, oh, crap, I got to go pick up this birthday gift for this birthday party we're going to this weekend. And the laundry needs to be moved from the washer to the dryer. You know, like even just one day a week or 2 days a week, depending on how they split their time, I knew it was being taken care of while I was still able to focus on work stuff. So that was where we started with help at home. We now have somebody that comes every week to help clean the house. It used to be they came once a month. So like things have adjusted as we've changed things. We obviously lean on family and friends quite a bit and make carpool friends for all the sports activities. I think this is getting more into the weeds than people probably care about, but like we took a tally in the spring and we had 32 hours of sports practices every week between the kids' activities.
Guys, she's not lying because I do have access to her calendar and all of the kids' schedules are on there too. And I'm like, wow.
And when I counted that up, I was like, oh my God, this is like truly a full-time job. I also make it a priority. Like I want to be the one to pick them up from school because that's just really important to me. And so all this to say is I'm still figuring things out as we go. I do not consider myself a parenting business running expert. This is why I don't talk about it a lot. I'm happy to share my experiences and answer questions, but I would never put myself out there of like, this is, you know, I've got it all figured out because I do not. But ultimately, I'm working pretty much 9 to 2-ish on school days. And then I go to my second full-time job of picking up kids and running them around. But I will say, too, a lot of people are like, well, why don't you hire somebody to help drive the kids or carpools and stuff? And honestly, that's like some of my favorite time in the car with them because they're like sharing what's happening at school or with friends. And so I don't know. We're making things work somehow. Every day is a little bit different. Patrick is very involved, too. I mean, he helps participate in all the driving and everything else too, but he's really active and it's just summertime is always bananas and we're still trying to figure that out. So, yeah.
Love that we're recording this right at the beginning when it's the crazy, you know, we just like to torture ourselves.
I know. It's good though.
Okay. The next juicy question.
Yeah.
What are the operating expenses for Proof to Product as a whole? We did the expenses just for the podcast, but obviously there's so much more to this business than just this podcast.
Yeah.
So what range per month are we talking? Because it was a common question and I felt like I needed to ask.
Yeah, sure. So I just want to preface this by saying I don't talk about my business numbers publicly very often. And the reason for that is I don't think it benefits my audience. I don't think it benefits my clients. I know there's a lot of coaches and consultants and course creators and stuff out there preaching about how, you know, they make $1 million a day and all this. And they're lying, by the way.
Definitely lying. Yeah.
Allegedly. Yeah. But I don't
trained you well.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't talk about this a lot because, again, I don't think it benefits my folks. But I mean, here's what I will say. My operating expenses now are much different than when we started. I was running real lean when we started. I was using tools and like turning them off when we didn't need them. Like, for example, when we first started running webinars, I would like sign up for a month and then turn it off when we were done. Now we obviously have, I still have a small team, but they're a very important piece of what we do. I have tech automations and things that we utilize, which quite frankly feels a little bit bloated right now. And we're making some changes there, which will be great for streamlining customer experience and also our costs. I am now more savvy too on the side of how I'm paying myself and my 401k situations. I didn't have all of that previously. We pay our speakers, we pay our community leaders, we pay the people that are active participants in our programming. So those are expenses that tie into everything too. I do think there's a misconception out there that like a business like mine runs pretty streamlined and there's not a lot of overhead. I will share, not including my salary, not including any of the retirement stuff, we spend between $15,000 and $20,000 per month to run Proof to Product. So it's
which
not,
is still like in the scale of businesses, like relatively lean.
Yeah, and, for sure.
But it's not $2,000 a month. Like this, you're putting a lot of money out there to keep this operating.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's a variety of things. It's the people, right. The tech, the programming, all of that combined.
So I think it's common that business owners feel stuck at various points during their entrepreneurial journey. Again, since you've started technically since 2008, the first business, it hasn't always been sunshine and rainbows and smiley faces.
Totally.
So can you remember a time whenever you were stuck in business, whether it was the first business or this business that you have now, and how you worked through it? Because again, we ask that question like of our guests, but I don't know if we've ever shared kind of like your perspective on it.
You know, it's funny. You're asking this question and I'm like, gosh, there's been so many times where things were hard. There were times, you know, I mentioned the 2016 overload and had to go on the solo retreat and make changes. We started preparing to launch our labs membership in December of 2019. And then we launched it in April of 2020, which as we all know, COVID hit in March of 2020. And we had the big question of like, okay, we spent months creating this thing. Do we still move forward with it? Is this something we need to be selling?
We spent a lot of time talking about that question. Because again, it's not like you decided on a whim, let's start this membership. And things had already been in motion, you know?
Oh, yeah. Huge motion. Like people hired, consultants, like all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Tech, all kinds of stuff. And this audience of people really was hit. I mean, everyone was affected by COVID, but business-wise, you know, I worked with a lot of brick and mortars at the time with my business, and they all were like, well, I can't have my brick and mortar open.
so I can't.
See ya.
Our question mark was, do we move forward with this or not? And I ultimately decided, yes, let's move forward. We've already kind of created it. And I think this will help people get through the tough spots. And, you know, we did. We focused a lot at the beginning of like, okay, here's how to keep making money through this crazy time. And, you know, I mean, I will say too, some of our clients have the best years in 2021, 2022, 2020. And I think it's, again, because they kept showing up, going back to that resilience piece of it. But, you know, that was super challenging. And then in the middle of COVID, my capacity was just shot. Like I felt like I was caring a lot for a lot of people. I had a lot of people turning to me for answers at a time where I didn't know the answers. I didn't know what was happening with COVID. I didn't know what was going to be going on. And also home life was crazy with all these kids home and Patrick was home working here. Like I don't know. I felt really stressed. I know we all had a really tough time through that season, but that was when I decided, okay, I got to push pause on this mastermind because my clients would probably argue with you because they felt well taken care of, but I didn't feel like I was showing up in my best way for them. And that didn't feel good for me. So I said, you know what? I'm pushing pause. Let's come back to this when I feel, you know, like my mental health needed the break. And so that was a tough time. I think I'm kind of in one right now too, to be honest. I mean, the business is 14 years old. We're running the 46th round of paper camp coming up soon. There's still a high demand for everything we're putting out, which is wonderful. But I'm feeling a little bit like, okay, we need to refine things behind the scenes. Like I mentioned the tech stack, you know, and some of the other things. Like I want to simplify. I want to create ease for people. I want to give them solutions they need right away. And so just I think one of the challenges is balancing what others want, what I'm able to do, and then also, again, those expectations of I'm not moving fast enough. This isn't happening quickly enough. Like that's where I need to give myself a lot more grace. So I would say that every year brings different challenges. Every week brings different challenges. But yeah, I mean, those are just a few of the things that I've had to work through. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty more that I'm just not thinking of in the moment. But yeah.
What do you miss about running a product business?
Oh, I get the creative work in other ways now, but I miss the hands-on tactical stuff. I miss the designing, the picking out the colorways. I miss even the trade shows and talking to all the buyers and doing like, So just to be clear with everybody, I shut down the manufacturing arm of Kelp Designs in 2016. Yes, 2016. But I still have my work licensed with some licensing partners and stuff. And I do create some new things for them sometimes, but I just haven't had the capacity to do more for them. And so, yeah, I think that's the part I miss, the creative, which is funny, Brittany, because that's what a lot of our clients complain about when they start building these businesses. They're like, oh, so much of my time is now spent on managing and doing the operations and doing the order fulfillment. I'm not doing all the creative stuff I was doing. And I get it. Like, that's the part I miss most too.
What is advice that you'd offer your 2011 self whenever you were starting Trade Show Bootcamp?
Hold on tight. It's going to be a wild ride. I never imagined that this is where we'd be, you know? And I know I talk about this a lot with clients and in our programs and stuff, but like slow, steady growth is the way to success. And I just continued to put one foot in front of the other back then. And that's what I continue to do now. So I would probably remind myself that just slow, steady growth is the way you're going to get where you want to go. And it may take longer than you want. And you might forget sometimes that you have control to set the rules and say yes and no, but like you have a lot of power in this situation. So stick to your guns on things and keep moving forward.
What does community mean to you now compared to when you started?
Huh. That's an interesting question. I kind of feel like it's the same. Like I view community as, and I view this in my personal life and my business life. I view it as, how can we support one another to meet our goals? Meaning, how can I connect you, Brittany, with people that will help you and reach your goals faster? How can I help our clients? I mean, I love teaching about wholesale. That's what we focus on most. Like, I love helping them get their systems in place so that when they do their outreach, they hear back from the buyers and hopefully get those orders. To me, community is about how can we bring like-minded people together in an environment where people are openly sharing. And they're giving as much as they're receiving is part of this, right? And I feel like we have really done a great job of building that culture within the Proof to Product community, particularly in our alumni group, in our labs program, my advisory board group, of course. But I also think one of the things that's tough about community is there's so much information out there right now. And there's also people that will like overstep boundaries sometimes and ask proprietary questions of people like strangers on the internet. And so I think in my view of community, you have to be willing, like you need to get to know people before you're comfortable sharing that stuff. And I think with what we do, especially in Paper Camp, where they come into this cohort and we share so openly and answer every single question that they ask us, and we like tailor our responses to their particular circumstances, that makes them feel more empowered to share their experiences with others. So in a lot of situations, I think community is built because of what we're giving first before we're asking or taking of others. And so that example of strangers on the internet asking where you produce things, I always tell people, don't do that because you don't have a relationship with them. They're not going to feel comfortable sharing that. So I think it's relationship-based. It's making sure that we're giving as much as we're receiving and being an active participant too. And again, this is something that I do in my own personal business with my peer mastermind groups and even the paid masterminds that I'm in. It's what I do in my personal life with all the other parents in the sports and the schools and stuff. I view community as our village of people that are there to support me as a parent or as a business owner. And so I want to be that support for others as well. It's reciprocal.
Final question.
Yeah.
What's next for the podcast? What do you want to happen in the next 400 episodes? And also, what's up next for Proof to Product? Are we going to give them a little tease? Are we going to...
Should we give them a little tease?
Some changes are coming. Updates are coming.
Yeah. Gosh, if you had told me in 2017 that we'd be recording this 400th episode, now I would have like laughed and been like, oh, okay, that sounds good. Like nervous laughter of like, really, we're going to do that? So I am really excited for what the next 400 bring. I'm excited and beyond. There are times where I'm definitely tired and like, okay, can we sustain this for another 400? Yes, we absolutely can because we've created some really great systems that make it possible. But I would say more storytelling. I want to highlight brands in our community that are doing really cool and different things, because I also want to remind people that there's no one path to business success, that we can build these businesses in so many different ways and still reach our goals. And so bringing people on to share their story really helps emphasize that. I have really enjoyed some of the recent episodes we've done with like Emily Lay on the tariffs was like one of my favorite episodes. This episode we did with Pat Flynn recently, it was one of my favorites. So I do also want to bring in other people in the industry or even from outside of our industry that are doing interesting things that can be adapted to what our product-based listeners are needing and wanting in their business. I study other industries pretty regularly to see what's working and not working, and then I bring that back to our community. But I think it's even more powerful when I can bring in other people to share their stories to do that. There's so much that we learn through storytelling. It's such an important piece of what we do. So I guess that's what I foresee for the podcast. In terms of what's coming for Proof to Product as a whole, we are making some pretty significant back-end changes to things. And I'm really excited about them. Slightly terrified too, because it's a lot of work. But I know that these changes are going to make it a better customer experience for the folks in our programs. I know that it's going to make our lives easier to deliver high quality programming and product. So I know that it'll be worth it. It's just we got to get through the tough spot right now to get there. So we'll share more details as they become available.
And we have made it through so much tougher, you know, like we will get through this. It's a big task, but we're excited about it. It's going to help everybody out.
Totally.
Even more. I think everybody's going to be excited about it once it's all rolled out.
Yeah.
Haiti, thanks so much for coming onto your own podcast and being a guest.
Thank you for having me, Brittany. This was lovely.
Would you like to share where people can find out more information about you?
So you can find me at proof2product.com or here on the podcast. We're on all platforms under Proof to Product. Oh my gosh, so silly. I just want to thank you for doing this. I feel like when the 400th episode was coming up and we're, you know, brainstorming, I was like, oh, we could do compilations. Let's bring our community into this. And we've done that in the past for other milestone episodes. And it's always awesome. It does take more logistical work, but you brought up this idea. You're like, what if we turn the mic on you and I interview you? And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I like? I know I have things of value to add, right? But I'm also like, what are people going to ask? What do people want to know? And it was pretty surprising. I did not know the questions you were going to ask me today, but I did see things come through that I forwarded to you. And it was really interesting to me to see some of the more businessy sides of how we operate Proof to Product and how things are working. And so if that is something people are more interested in, drop me a note on Instagram and let me know. But I do think that my background in business has helped me with the sustainability of some of this too. But also, I'm not afraid to make changes when we need to, which we're in the middle of. Oh, here we go.
No. Well, thank you so much for letting me take the host seat. You know, it's like our podcast is it's the pillar that kind of everything starts from and like leads people to the different paid programs. So I take the responsibility very seriously. So thank you so much for trusting me and taking over and being the host. And just imagine if this is the first episode that somebody is listening to. I'm not regularly on the podcast.
You did a great job. This was great.
Thank you.
If this is their first, I hope you enjoyed today. And there's lots of great stuff in the archives too.
Yes. Amazing. Thanks so much, Katie.
Thank you.